What if this isn't a climate crisis, but the greatest opportunity humanity has had in a long time? Lean Into Clean will explore and discuss with highly esteemed guests on what could be the new spirals for society, sustainability, spirituality, and social harmony. Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural ways so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. Happy Monday to everybody. Shout out to Katie, my lovely wife. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday. I will be seeing her, but I just thought it'd be quite a nice thing to do on radio. I am just back from a trip in Egypt, so sorry I wasn't with you last week. I was invited by a very, very special friend, Michelle Narciso, who you may remember, who is the founder of OM, with a group of 10 people. And we had a private trip to the sacred sites in Egypt. We went into the Great Pyramid and various other sacred sites completely alone. It was totally private and personal. I tell you what, it was the most extraordinary experience. I don't know if any of you have been seeing the latest updates on the Egyptian, let's see, history, let's call it that. That some of the history that's coming up now is kind of proving that, you know, what has been said is perhaps not the case. And maybe these sacred sites were energy centers created by ancient civilizations who were probably much cleverer than us. So just try and get that into your hearts and minds. I do believe that there could have been ancient clever civilizations on this planet. So I do think that this information is coming to light as we speak. Anyway, that's a bit of a personal insight to what I've been up to. But let's get into today's news. I was just looking at the site, actually, because I wanted to catch up. So as you know, on mygreenpod.com, we put a news article up every day, and every 2 months we publish a magazine. By the way, it's free to get that magazine. So if you go to mygreenpod.com/subscribe, you can subscribe to our 40 to 50 page magazine that comes out every 2 months for free. So if you care about sustainability, your health, the planet's health, our future generations' health, that's the magazine to get. But anyway, this article, it actually went up a couple of days ago on November the 1st. It does kind of link to today's guest, who I'm super excited to speak to shortly, and I'm sure you'll be thrilled about the conversation. But this the headline was Shifting Food Taxes. I love this. Listen to this. A food tax shift could save lives without a price hike in the average shopping basket, which I'm sure we would all appreciate. Now, let me just read this out to you for a minute. It says, a comprehensive study led by researchers from Chalmers University of Technology in Sweden has analysed the potential effects of a food tax shift where VAT is removed from healthy foods and levies are introduced on foods that have a negative impact on the climate. How cool is that? The study shows that a shift in taxes could have both environmental and human health benefits and cause 700 fewer people in Sweden to die prematurely each year. Wow, 700 fewer people. That's amazing. Impacts of diet. So today, diet in many high-income countries is a leading risk factor for certain diseases and premature death. I think it was just announced that actually obesity has become the prominent illness across that's linked to food, which is awful. In Western Europe, unhealthy diets cause many times more deaths annually than high levels of alcohol consumption and about as many deaths as smoking. Wow. What we eat also has a very negative impact on the climate. In Sweden, the negative impact on the climate from food consumption is roughly twice that of the direct emissions from all Swedish passenger car traffic. I mean, this is just, it's astronomical figures. It goes on to say current policy initiatives mainly rely on providing dietary guidelines and the European Commission's own advisory body, Science Advice for Policy, by European academics, which is SAPIE or SAPI, SAPEA, has recommended economic incentives to encourage healthier diets. This new study analyzed how such incentives could be implemented in practice using a food tax shift and what effects a reform of this kind might have. The case examined was Sweden, but according to the researchers, the results are relevant for most high-income countries. The study was carried out by researchers from Chalmers University of Technology, the Karolinska Institute, and the Swedish University of Agricultural Sciences. I mean, this is amazing. It does go on. It says, with a food tax shift, VAT would be removed from some of the foods we should be eating more of, according to studies such as the recently released EAT Lancet report. The researchers have also calculated the effects of imposing levies on certain foods that have a big impact on the climate. So that is really good, right? So toxic foods, and we all know what they are, the sugars and the white flours and the white processed foods, ultra processed foods, etc., will have levies. And the healthy foods, the organics and the locally farmed and regeneratively farmed, etc., will have much lower, if any. I mean, that is very, very cool. I would definitely, definitely vote for that. Tell me what you think about it. The rest of the article is available at mygreenpod.com, so don't forget to go and check out there. Do sign up and subscribe. And that brings me very nicely to today's guest. Now, today's guest is very much linked to the subject that we've just talked about, but I'm going to read out his bio because I think it will just give you a little bit of an insight to today's guest. So Sean Ruffle is the managing director of Manchester-based wholesalers Organic North, who over the past 28 years have grown to become one of the largest purveyors of organic produce in the UK. Organic North is committed to making organics as accessible to as many people as possible and trade utilizing a buying model that creates zero food waste. Concurrent to his work with Organic North, Sean is also an ambassador of both the Soil Association, shout out to you guys, and Farming the Future, also shout out to you. He is also a member of the Manchester Food Board, who look to offer strategic leadership on how food can be used to bring about positive, meaningful, and lasting change in Manchester. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean, Sean.
Thank you very much, Jarvis. I'm glad to be here.
Ah, we're really glad to hear. I mean, what did you think to that Swedish levy that could potentially come onto toxic food? You'd be up for that, wouldn't you?
Oh, just a bit. Just a bit more of that kind of thing. I hope DEFRA are tuning in and looking for some policy advice. That's exactly the kind of thing we need. Going after the ultra processed and all the things that cause so much harm, I'd be well behind that.
Yeah, it sounds super cool, doesn't it? I think we are in a time where we're going to start seeing these things implemented. I mean, I think there's a case of having to because it's climatically important, but also people want this now, don't they? Have you noticed a growing trend in the organic movement in 28 years? Tell me a little bit about what it was like 28 years ago and the organic movement.
It's changed a lot, mate. So yeah,
I bet.
we've seen some roller coaster years, and it really. I was talking to just one of our customers about this about an hour ago. So the financial crash hit things heavy. So the demand for organics took a big hit in 2008 and 9, and the supermarkets dropped their organic lines, and that impacted some of the bigger growers, particularly in the UK. So it
Yeah.
was on the way then. It was dodgy times. And what we've
Yeah.
seen, what we've seen since then is just like a slow recovery. But to the point now, I know that the Soil Association have got a big day of stats planned on Thursday, talking about the general outlook of the market and what they're hopefully not stealing their thunder to say that organics are growing about four times faster in the UK than non-organic food. And
That's
Tesco,
brilliant,
yeah,
isn't it?
it's good to hear, isn't it, mate? I mean,
Yeah.
the Tesco just released their own organic range, and I'm not a big A massive fan of supermarkets generally in the way they behave, but to at least see those that recognition, that demand, that's a good pointer, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And the thing is that you and I, we're probably quite discerning about where we shop and who we buy from, because we want to be giving our money to companies that do actually care about the big picture. So I do really appreciate your comment about supermarkets and whether they actually have people or suppliers at their as part of their kind of purpose. But the problem is that most people do shop at supermarkets, don't they? The majority of people do. We get an organic food box from Riverford, and we have done for years and years and years and years and years. I bet you probably supply them, do you, in some way, shape, or form?
We work with them. They're a fabulous company, and they've led the way in our sector for decades. They've done a great job, support loads of growers, and are really loyal to them. So we only ever hear good things. They've actually, though we don't supply Riverford, they've actually introduced us to in the last couple of years a couple of farms that we never would have got the opportunity to work with, but for working with Riverford. So, yeah, they're one of the companies that look to collaborate and look to help people in the industry, just their work with, if you look at their work they do on the WikiLeaks front, the news stuff. There's not many people doing, yourself aside, there's not many people doing that kind of news and getting it out or managing to get it out there successfully. That's the key thing, I guess. So yeah, kudos to them.
Yeah, good for you. Anyway, we're here to talk about you, not them, but I just wanted to share with you, we're massive advocates for organic food. In fact, I would say probably 90% of the stuff we eat is organic, and occasionally certain things you just have difficulty getting, but we always try. And we have that philosophy that Vivienne Westwood talked about. If you can't afford organic food, then just eat less.
She was always to the point, Vivian.
Yeah, she really was. Anyway, let's talk about you. So what first drew you into the world of organic food, Sean? What was your There's always a good story behind people like you. What was your moment?
It was a funny one. It was the coalescing of a lot of different things, but I love my food, always loved my food, and growing up I didn't have access to particularly good quality food. That never became apparent as a problem necessarily until much later on in life. But I had the opportunity when I got out of university. I'd worked in lots of factories, and I was walking home from a cake factory that I used to work at, past a job centre, and seen a job just lifting veg, and the fact that it was an organic veg place jumped out. To buy organically or to eat organically has always just seemed common sense if you can afford to do it. As you say, even if you're a discerning shopper, sometimes obviously you've not got access to it for the cost of the food. So it's been a slow burner getting into organics, as in being able to afford to keep all the house organic now, as we do all the foods we eat, and it's a
Yeah,
big privilege. But yeah, and
it
it was
is.
what made it particularly interesting was after that financial crash I mentioned that we all know about. There was an opportunity. I've been here about 5 years in this small co-op, and because it was looking perilous at the time. I got the opportunity to apply some of me politics to basically a business that, though small, already at least existed. I'd have never opened my own business or anything like that. I haven't got the wherewithal, I don't think. Because it was already there, the basics were already there. We had a couple of vans and a computer, a small warehouse, and a few customers and suppliers. It was the basis of something that was seemed quite easy to grow, really, just to add a few of my you might say principles, I guess, onto the companies, and they're not complicated things, but over the years we've looked to add more and more of them, and that's just seemed to make us more popular, to the point now where it's starting to get really interesting. So we've usually sold into retail over the last 20 years since I've been here. It's been shops and box schemes like Riverford you mentioned earlier on. But most recently we're looking to do some supply into community pantries and to schools,
Oh,
and
nice.
this really lit my eyes up when I found that we're doing things so well that we're managing to to get across the fact that organics from the farm gate is so I'm told 40% more expensive than non-organic food. And because we work on low margins and we like to think we're slightly efficient, that means that we can now compete. So despite the increased price at the farm gate, because we're not looking to take huge margins as a middle person, as wholesalers are, then we're able to pass things on and make organics more affordable. So that's particularly interesting to me at the moment.
That's amazing. I love it. I tell you what, I just heard the other day that Jamie Oliver, I think, is back campaigning again for schools, and it just suddenly reminded me of all the work he did. I mean, that's incredible. It's so nice that these I guess we can call them institutions or communities are actually, firstly, it's going to be a cost saving, but secondly, they must be appreciating the fact that organic food is the way to go. It's really that's no small feat. Well done. Well done. I mean,
Okay.
what in terms of like your just tell us a bit about your organization. Just tell us a bit about Organic North. What's it what does it do? What's its purpose?
It's very simple what we do. We're simply looking to make organic food as accessible as possible to as many people as possible without exploiting anyone or anything in the process. So that
Nice.
Be it the environment, the people producing the food, or the people who we work with, our colleagues, our customers, we're looking to keep things. We try and give a good array of food to go at. So we look to have a broad selection. We try and pay people fairly and quickly. We have like a no haggle policy with our growers. So whatever they say the price is, that's what it is. We're not looking to drive. Well, them horror stories you hear of supermarkets driving farmers out of business, like squeezing them for pennies. We don't do that. And then we buy in such a way, as you mentioned at the start there in your intro, very kind intro, thank you. That
You're welcome.
we only buy in what we need. So that's quite uncommon. So rather than speculating on big pallets and warehouses full of various things, we make a list, we make it live, customers order from that list, and we only get in what we need. And that means everything's fresh, nothing's stored, and it just goes straight out. I think that's, well, according to a customer that came all the way from the Isle of Wight this morning to see us, living larder
Wow.
down there. Yeah, that's the thing they told us, and that was really, really appreciated. It made me day. That yeah,
Yeah,
they're
Living
fresh and
Larder, that's a cool name.
they're great. They're great. They're growers themselves, and they do run a box scheme down on the island. And it's a testament to what we're doing, really, that we're sending veg that far, and we still manage to be competitive going all the way to the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. So just walk us through a daily. I tell you what, let's not do that. I'm going to ask you just to walk us through a daily kind of, action points of things that happen, Organic North, because I want people just listening just to understand like what that looks like. But let's just very quickly go to a commercial break. It's that time. So Sean, don't go away. Everybody out there listening, don't go away. We're going to come back and hear about just the Organic North's daily activities and just to get under the skin a little bit. Back soon.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm here with Sean Ruffle on today's Lean Into Clean, how we can live more sustainably, more kindly, more sensitively, and connected to our lovely, beautiful planet that provides everything for us to survive. I'm here with Sean Ruffle. Sean, just tell us about a typical day down at Organic North, and what's the environment? Is it a kind of, a big warehouse, or, what is it, a farm? Tell us a bit about it. Paint the picture.
Right. Well, today's kind of a perfect example. No 2 days are quite the same. We've had 2 visits, one from a customer and one from one of our collaborators, you might say, who's acting on our behalf, trying to fix lots of things that we can't fix. We've had 2 visitors this morning. There's a lot to juggle. So let's take it from the start. So our day starts at 3 a.m. So I'm up at 2
Wow.
a.m. Yeah, it's been a long day already. So 3 a.m., all the veg comes in, all fresh, and it takes us 5 hours, 25 of us almost now. It takes us 5 hours to dish all that veg out, and it's approximately around 100 tons of veg. So,
Wow.
yeah, we're by hand, we're lifting all that veg onto all these little pallets that are labeled up for all of our different customers around the UK on that day. So we're distributing all them out. It takes about 5 hours, and then chaos ensues for a while. So that we all break off into different teams. We've got the drivers turn up. Some work lifting the veg, but some just come in a bit later, and their vans are loaded and they're off around the country. And then another team's off up into the office, and they'll be processing orders and figuring out how to fix any problems we might have. And then we've got a third team who's building pallets, as we call it, which is the go into sending orders onto big haulage that go further than we can deliver ourselves. So they go as far as Belfast and Aberdeen and even Jersey each week. So yeah, there's that's just takes us to about 10 o'clock. We all have a lovely organic breakfast at around 10-ish, which is nice.
Nice.
Yeah, which puts a nice line over that really difficult bit in the morning. That's taxing when you're tired and what have
Yeah.
you. So the day just gets easier and easier. And yeah, it's we usually work about 10 or 12 hours a day on a Monday and a Wednesday.
Gosh.
But yeah, that's when we get our fresh stuff in, and they're the intense days. And the other days, anything can happen really. But Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we're delivering out. So we've got drivers on the road, we've got people in the office, liaising with farmers all over Europe and the UK. So be it Sicily or just down the road in Stockport, we're organising how we're going to get thousands of boxes each week from all these different places safely to us without any hiccups. And that's It's a
Wow.
simple gig, really. It can be a very
It
simple gig
sounds
when it goes
complicated. Logistically, it
well.
sounds complicated, but
Practice
you've been
makes
doing it a
perfect.
long time,
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you know it
yeah.
inside out.
20 years next week, no less.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. What are the biggest shifts or mindsets for people when they want to start shopping organic? What do you find are the best sellers?
The best sellers, I mean, you do often see articles of like the Dirty Dozen or the 10 most sprayed veg. And I think this might be surprising, it might not, but the market research, not done by us, but what I've read, is that people connect a lot more to the health of themselves and their family than the more external environment. They're not as it's more visceral when it's their own, what they're ingesting themselves. Sometimes it takes a bit more to have that ID relationship, if you like, with the environment that you might have with your child or your friend or whatnot. So I think the more publicity, the more studies that are done, the more evidence that's shown for the impact that various herbicides and pesticides and what have you can have on people's health and the health of the soils of our planet. The more traction we see every time we see like David Attenborough, even a David Attenborough show, and this you know if there's as soon as we see a plastic bag wrapped around a turtle's head in some sea, then we're inundated with emails and phone calls saying, tell me more about the type of plastic you use. Is it cellulose based? Is it reusable? Is it a one use thing? People get interested. So I think there's a job certainly for telling stories there. There's a job for be it nature documentaries or academic studies into food and the environment, and that seems to help. But the biggest sellers, it depends, it's seasonally, so we try and stock seasonally as you would if you've got a mind to be green. So at the moment there's just an abundance from all over the UK. It's squash season. We might have 100 varieties of squash on soon from all over the place. It's the sea of colour at the minute. So it's all about squash. Yeah. Squash soups, all that
Squash,
hearty.
pumpkins and all of
Yep.
those, marrows and all of those, and a good time of year for that. Great,
That's it.
great. Thank Thank you for that. I think this might be a good moment to play your first song, Sean. I think there's a sweet moment just here. I always ask my guests just to give us two songs that are kind of soundtracks to their lives, and we often get some really interesting tracks. Tell us the song that you're going to play. Who it's by, what it's called, and then afterwards you can tell me why you chose it.
So this is a song called There But for Fortune by the iconic Joan Baez.
Oh, fantastic. I hope you enjoy it as much as we will. We'll see you back here shortly after the song. There But for Fortune. What a beautiful song. I love it. Why did you choose that, Sean?
Joan's been a hero of mine probably 30 years, and I think that was the song that first introduced me to her work. It's a song or a hymn, almost, you might describe it as, that immediately hits you between the eyes, and in 3 minutes she covers lots of ground. It talks about folk, or various folk, that have fallen through society's cracks, and that could have definitely happened to me a couple of times over the years, so I can relate to that. And yeah, reminds us not to take for granted, I guess, the privileges that you might enjoy, and how easily they can be lost. So definitely something to remember as you go, as you wander through your days.
Yeah, beautiful. I love it. I love it. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a very, very beautiful song. So let's get back to Organic North. So did you say there's roughly about 25 of you over at there over at the and that so that's and I mean, I guess you're all a community. You're all a kind of, one big family, which must be amazing. But tell me about some of the challenges that you might have had over the years, because you're fighting against an industry that seems to be not particularly respectful of people or planet. And I do mean the food industry. There's a lot of negativity around the food industry now. Those big companies, and we all know who they are, that are providing, most of the products that people are buying come from probably, 10 companies. Just tell me about some of the challenges that you've had and how you've managed to be so incredibly resilient in this space.
Well, there's many challenges, and they seem like none more so than now on the back end of Brexit. So financially, there's a lot of red tape since Brexit, and then you've got the competition of big supermarkets who do things like loss leaders, and they'll undersell a lot at certain times of the year produce that you get in, which really does or can undermine the market and give people a false sense of what food actually costs. Which really doesn't help. So on top of that, every time there's a political crisis, as well as economic ones, when you have the political ones, be it Brexit or be it the Gilets Jaunes, if you remember that in France, always got big respect for those groups and what they do. But logistically, that's very problematic when you're relying on deliveries from mainland Europe, so that can be challenging. And then you've just got the price. The geopolitics when Ukraine's invaded. I mean, you might not have heard this, but there was a lot of typically or traditionally, you might say, there's been a lot of growers of salad items in Holland, and we went when Ukraine was invaded by Russia terribly. That meant that the gas price went crazy. That meant the glass houses that the Dutch had, they didn't produce nearly as many, or they couldn't produce nearly as many salad items, which sent the price of tomatoes and the things and cucumbers that they grew there up a lot. So you kind of attacked from well, indirectly from all kinds over the years, and that's just regardless of the regular business concerns you might have of how the market's doing. Have people got enough? You've got the cost of living crisis, which is obviously massive, and just seems here for good at the moment. It's been here that long, so yeah. In this time, in the time I've been here, there's been many challenges, and I think if you want the, what's helped us is if you just try to trade openly and you're very honest about the provenance of where things are coming from, people have appreciated that and that you don't, I suppose in maybe in line with that song that's just been on, if you maintain a degree of humility that we wouldn't have jobs as humble middlemen here between farmers and customers if it wasn't for them. So we're here really representing them. Representing the good work they do in the fields or on the front line in the shops, and trying to, if we can, better our software, better our logistics, make it more efficient, make it more affordable, if we can, without, so long as we're not compromising people's lives or the planet in the process.
Nicely put. It's interesting you brought up tech because one of my questions was, is, we've got this big kind of technology revolution happening right now with AI and robots and all of these AI systems coming into play. Will this have an impact on your business? And will it be a good one? Will it be a not so good one? Are you future-proofing the business? In any
Big,
way
yeah.
around some of this AI system changes.
It's a big question, and it's a lot to unpack. So I won't go on. It's like a, I could go on about it for ages. But we've used things like this for quite a while already, to our benefit. But at the same time, I think something that has to be remembered in every sector, be it food or education or anything like this, is that we. Our relationship with food is sacred, and if you lose that at your peril. So if you're looking at, say, like Dyson's farms, his big strawberry farm that's never seen a human hand or eye, and it's picked, grown by and picked by robots. To question what this does for anyone, really, that's positive. I suppose, in an economic sense, you could say, "What is growth, or what's a good society?" And if you're basing that only on GDP, then you're gonna. I think you're doing everyone a disservice, really. It may take more hands to grow veg on an organic farm than on, obviously, someone like Dyson's farm with his strawberries, but. Is that a bad thing? That there's a community of people connected to their own sustenance, not unalienated from the thing that gives them nourishment. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. So, on one side, the AI particularly, can help. It can help on some administrative things, and some basic information things. So long as you're able to filter the results somewhat. But yeah, I'm nervous in loads of ways about AI. Tech more generally. Our software, we developed a software platform ourselves over the last 7 years, and that's helped us no end. That's really, it's kind of give us an edge that we otherwise really wouldn't enjoy. So, yeah, I'm all for thinking of new ways that we can streamline things, so long as it doesn't alienate the people who are in the chain. That's the key thing. If it's getting rid of somewhat boring work that they really don't want to do, some arduous stuff, then. Fair enough, but yeah.
No, great, great. No, I love the way you've responded to that. Clearly, there's pros and there's potential cons, but well, I guess we don't know what completely they are yet. I want to come back to you after this next commercial break and just ask you about, what's the future for Organic North? You're seeing, 4% year-on-year growth. Hopefully, that'll pick up some more. What's the future for you? What are you doing to make sure that you're able to scale and be with that growth? But don't go away, everyone listening. We're going to go to a commercial break and we'll be back just in a couple of minutes. We'll be back with Sean and we'll find out what's next.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. Welcome back. If you've just tuned in, I'm here with Sean Ruffell from Organic North, one of the country's leading organic wholesalers, so I couldn't think of the word then. We've covered lots of stuff, so it's been a really, really interesting show, Sean. Thank you very, very much. But I'd love to know in this last section of the show, what have you got planned? What's up your sleeve? I mean, you've been in this game a long time. You are seeing growth in an industry that has been very slow to grow. It was like 1% per annum and then 2%, and now we've doubled to 4%. Does that mean it's going to double to 8% next year? Let's hope so. So just tell us a little bit about what you're planning, what your vision is, in order to keep that growth and the momentum in the industry. You're the expert. We want to know from you.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but one of the things that has helped over the last couple of decades that I've been here is that we've never had top-down pressure from shareholders. We're a cooperative, and we were set up to give the growers that supplied the original directors, who all had their own little independent box schemes. They thought they'd give their small growers, their suppliers, a platform to reach a bigger market and hopefully save some money in the process. That was the original thought. But because I've been given largely a free rein for a long time now to do things, and any money we can make, we can reinvest. That's meant that we didn't have to really have a. We've been able to be agile to change when it happened. There's been a lot of changes. That's helped a lot, and so reinvest the money. So we have reinvested in software, and we're constantly developing that. So one of the key things that we'd like to help our customers and our growers as much as possible, aiding them with software. It can be really expensive for them to use, and we're often asked because we've made what some see as a good job of sorting our own software out, but from what we use in-house, our own bespoke software. We've had some growers and a good number of customers ask us. Would be interested in developing software for them, and that's something we're looking to do for free, so long as we can make it affordable. And that's largely based on another big challenge we have, which is we pay a lot of money to be on our little market warehouse here. It's quite expensive to be on a council market these days up in Manchester. So what we've been doing, we've been saving for 15 years to try and get enough money to potentially buy our own digs and free ourselves of that round the neck, that kind of thing that's been slowing us down and meaning that our growth can only be slow, however hard we work. We've never had, because we've been saving, we've always worked on a skeleton staff, and that's meant that our growth has always been slow, which can have its benefits, but it's been slow. What we're hoping is, as we get busier with software improvements by potentially buying our warehouse and office, that we'll be able to afford to put time and people's efforts onto. We must have 1,000 projects written down that we could do. So there's lots of new places we can do. There's garden centres apparently selling lots of food and are interested in organics naturally now, and more restaurants. We could definitely supply a lot more restaurants. But the biggest one is the public sector. Well, a lot of people have spoke about the potential of the public sector for a long time, of how it could really unlock the food system in this country. And I agree about this. It's just very hard nut to crack. So I feel that the contracts that are involved in public procurement in selling veg to, say, 100 schools at a time in various localities, to be able to get one of those means a big, like, guaranteed income for a load of our farmers each year. And if we can pull this off, it's not easy at all. But if we can pull it off, then it could really unlock turning more farms organic, because it would give them that market and that guaranteed those guaranteed sales. It would be the persuasive thing that could switch them to looking like, if there's money in this, then why, that might be the last thing, why don't I do this? So yeah, that the big it'd be really exciting to if we can get into public procurement more. We've just started our first few schools. If we can broaden that out in time, and then in the end, hospitals and prisons. Joni was talking about Show Me a Prisoner in that first song. And if we can make people who are unfortunate enough to be in jail, if we can make their dinners organic, then I think I might go into something else. If we ever get there, then I'll maybe go and try and sort the water courses of the UK out or something different.
You know you've cracked it if you get into amazing. I mean, schools and hospitals absolutely feels like that common term, a no-brainer. Of course, we want our younger generations to be healthy, because that's better for the economy, if you want to look at it like that. And we want our people not to be sick. So I love that. But yeah, I love the prisons one. I think you're absolutely right. Often, there's plenty of studies done where people in prison are obviously not always the case, but usually in difficult circumstances or areas or whatever. It means that they might not be getting the kind of food that's going to give them a positive outlook on life, and that obviously is a downward spiral. So I love that. I think that's absolutely brilliant. Sean, I'm conscious that I want to get your next song in. So we're going to play your next song. You can tell me what that is in a second. But when we come back, we'll have a couple of minutes, and I want to throw this question at you. If you had a magic wand to change one thing about the UK food system, and you can actually have three, because I think one's quite hard, what would it be? So tell us about the song we're going to play. Tell us the name of the song and who it's by. Then when we come back, you can tell me why you played the song, and you can answer that question for me before the end of the show.
Cool. So this is a song very different from the first one, by DJ Zinc, and it's called Super Sharp Shooter.
Oh yes,
The
love
S,
it, love it,
the
love
U,
it.
the P, the E.
I love that record. I haven't heard it for such a long time. Why did you choose that, Sean? You gotta tell me why that rocks your boat.
It's a fair bit different from the first one, isn't it? But the we've got a couple. We've got a few people. We've got a lot of musicians who work with us, and a lot of people who are keen on, they have very eclectic tastes. And this one popped up years ago, and it's become a warehouse favorite, especially when it's
No.
really early morning. So,
Oh, brilliant.
yeah, when you're half asleep and you're needing some encouragement, it seems to be, despite obviously everyone having their own musical tastes. It's one of the unifiers. It's one of the ones that everyone enjoys. So yeah, it's a warehouse banger. It's one of the warehouse banger playlists, that one.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, shout out to your team. I hope they're gonna, if they're not listening now, then they'll be able to catch us on demand. Or everything that we do is available at the UK Health Radio website, and then it goes out onto various podcasts and et cetera, et cetera. So everybody will be able to catch up with us. Sean, this is your moment. So we've given you a magic wand. We've given you an opportunity to fix something, three things within the food industry. What would you do?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and I've been thinking about where power lies in the food industries. And obviously, government holds a vast amount of power.
Yeah.
Generally, the supermarkets hold the rest, if you like,
Yeah.
with regards to food. But the short of them pair, so that my, I mean, my magic wand stuff probably it relates all to the government, because I don't expect supermarkets to suddenly gain a conscience at this late hour. So it's like what we can do as a company. We see ourselves having a very privileged position, being between growers and customers, growers and retailers, say. The growers can do a great job, but the change they're doing, the effects they're having, is on a relatively small scale on their own. It's quite minimal and disconnected. And the same can be said about the retailers. You might have a great shop or a great box scheme, but again, your impact on its own isn't huge. But we find that, like, we do have a power in the middle of all them to potentially help them both. Hence the things I was talking about earlier with the software, things like
Yeah.
that. So. Yeah, we see some power in what we're doing, and we're looking to use that as best we can. I'm actually off to Parliament in a couple of weeks with a group I work with to try and lobby DEFRA
Good.
to change some of these policies. And these are my magic wand ones. So that's a roundabout way of, it'd be things we're going to ask DEFRA to do. So one of them would be to incentivize growers to grow to organic standards in the UK, to either adapt their techniques or to be incentivized to maintain the techniques that they're already employing. That would be huge and possible economically, I believe. Another one would be a policy that would incentivize the big public procurement contracts to favor sourcing from environmentally responsible suppliers. And this is
Love it.
happening already. Yeah, this is socially and environmentally responsible suppliers. This is already happening. It's slow. It's tectonic speed. So I'll be pushing for that. And then the last one, I guess, would be I'd like food to be taught way more in school. I want kids to be having the connection with growing, getting their hands in the mud, tasting good quality food, and and have an engaging way to cook, because it's the asking kids sometimes, where does this come from, or what's that? And the alienation when you just see kind of meat in a packet in a supermarket, and it's horrible. It's that disconnect, I think, that causes so much trouble. A colleague of mine, someone in the sector who I respect a lot, talked about at a recent veggie conference thing how we need to get back from a food system and a food industry and stop using words like this. And it's not just semantics, to back to like a relational economy, if you like, a relational situation. That's what we have with our growers. We're not going out getting drunk with them. We're doing something else. We're pals with the people we deal with, and I think it's a lot. You see a lot less exploitation in the way things move around if things are relational rather than just alienated, where we don't see each other and we're just commodities. So yeah, it'd be to encourage some more of that in schools if I
I
could.
love it. I love it. I think they're commendable. I'm sure everybody listening is whooping you because I think they're absolutely brilliant. We wish you the very, very best of luck. A very dear friend of mine, I was actually in Egypt with her last week. She runs the biggest and most successful climate fund in the world. Shout out to Tenzin Seldon. She's pitching governments right now for instead of to have gross domestic, well, GDP, moving to GDR, which would be gross domestic regeneration. And I absolutely love that. So to move from profit to regeneration is the future. So Sean, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'm going to play out and say goodbye to everybody. We're going to play out with yours truly's Save the World, that was song that we made with Greta Thunberg to raise money for Fridays for Future, Mapper, the most affected people in areas around the world. But Sean, thank you very much, man. I'm going to pop over and see you in Manchester. I'm only over in North Yorkshire. So next time I'm in the area, I'd love to come and see you and grab an organic apple or something while I'm there.
Cool. Thanks for inviting us on, Jarvis. It's been an absolute pleasure
It's an
getting to know you, mate.
absolute pleasure.
Cheers, pal.
Yeah, likewise, likewise. And I'll speak to you very soon. Thanks. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show. This is our song, Save the World. Please play it, put it on your playlist, etc., etc. The more money we rack up for this song being played, the more money we can donate to Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Futures movement. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Have a good week.